Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Living Your Life by Design, a conversation of self, health, and wealth. And now, your host, certified career consultant, life coach, and author, Kathy Holloway Hill.
Hello, everyone. Hello. Welcome to Living by Design. I am Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And you have both of us for the next 60 minutes. And we are going to bring you a fantastic show this evening. Well, Tony, can you believe we are closing out the month of July? The month of July is done. Well, for our shows, it is anyway. We have a few days left.
Yeah, and I know that what they say, when you're having a good time, time flies. Time flies when you're having fun. Well, that's exactly what's going on with the show this month.
Well, I just pray, and I am asking my Heavenly Father that I hope there has been so much transformation and so many lives that have been changed, and we have had so many wonderful guests and great topics of discussion about doing things different, just taking small steps, and, you know, just as long as you're moving forward and not moving backwards. That's the big, big, big lesson that we've tried to get across in this reinventing your mind to reinvent your life. Just celebrate small victories, no matter how small they are, and just move forward. Right, Tony? Just move forward.
Well, absolutely. And the thing about it is, as we said last week's show, you start from where you are, and starting from where you are gives you an opportunity to begin something new, and that's what it's all about, and beginning something new
and starting new habits, new behaviors. Just, you know, you got to get away from those old toxic habits and behaviors because it's just going to hold you back.
Right.
Well, I'm excited. I'm anxious to get the show going this evening. We have so many announcements and so many wonderful events coming up that we're just going to take a quick, short little commercial break here, and we're going to let you hear about all the great events that are going to be coming soon.
Have you accomplished your goals for this year? 2010 is almost coming to a close, but it's not too late to still win in 2010. Join me, Kathy Holloway Hill, and my friends and associates for an exciting lineup of events coming soon. Our Catalyst for Change workshops, our group coaching sessions, our Girlfriends for Life Regional Women's Conference, and the Steward Speakers VIP Gala, all coming soon to a city near you. Okay, take it away, Tony, and tell us about the Steward Speakers' upcoming fabulous series of events.
Steward & Associates presents the upcoming 2010-2011 Speaker Series. The season kicks off with a 25th anniversary celebration on Friday, October 15th, commemorating a quarter century of excellence. This grand gala kickoff will include a celebrity lineup of guests that you won't want to miss. And then the season begins on November 16th with Roland Martin. Guest speakers for the 2010-2011 season will include actor Hill Harper, Dr. Ben Carson, and First Lady Michelle Obama. Get your season tickets now. For details, please visit www.stewardspeakers.com. That's www.stewardspeakers.com.
All right. Well, you have it all. You have it all now. So if there was any piece of that that you didn't get and you need to get details, please visit my website. You can go to Steward Speakers' website that you just heard on that promo, or you can go to emotionalbailout.com to the events tab, and everything is listed there. So we hope you take part in some of those events because they are designed specifically with you in mind, because as we said in that little commercial clip there, 2010 is coming to an end. But you can still win in 2010. Okay, that's enough rhyming, Tony. That's enough.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a few rhymes there.
I know you like my rhymes, don't you, Tony? I know you like that.
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
I know you like it. I know. Okay, well, moving on. I am so anxious to bring my guest on the line tonight. My guest, now, I have to say, I'm a little, I'm not quite sure. We have a rule on this show that we don't open the line for blocked numbers. We don't open the line for Skype numbers because we've had some situations in the past. But I'm going to take a chance here because I think it's my guest. Anyway, our guest is Dr. Howard Gurr, and Dr. Howard has earned 2 master's degrees in psychology and a PhD in professional psychology. And he has a dual specialization in clinical and school psychology and just tons of accomplishments and accolades. He actually has his own radio show, Tony, entitled Psyched Up. I like that, Psyched Up. So what I'm going to do, because I really want to try to stick to my rule here with the block number, Dr. Howard, if that is you and your number is blocked, I'm going to ask you to hang up and redial back in. If you can redial back in where I can see the number that you're dialing from, that would be great, because we've just had a lot of unfortunate incidents with people coming on the line with blocked numbers, and this is a live show, and we have to be very careful and very cognizant for our listeners that we give them the best quality information. So with that, I am going to just continue right on, Tony, until hopefully Dr. Howard can just dial in with maybe his cell phone or a number that's not blocked so that we'll know that that he's ready to go, ready to rock and roll.
Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead, Tony.
Well, I was just going to say, and I'm sure everyone understands that because it's a different kind of show. I know Blog Talk has a variety of shows, as you mentioned, but this one is one that, you know, deals in a positive, and we don't like negative to even get across the airwaves. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have a lot of people. I receive tons of emails from people who get so much value and benefit from this show, and especially this topic that we've been dealing with this month and last month. And then we're going to be coming up on the topic next month. Our theme is going to be to just stop holding on. Just let go. You know, just stop. We've got to just learn how to let go of what we're trying to hold on to that's painful. And, you know, Tony, I know I posted an article on your blog, which I was very pleased. You know, I saw a few comments up there about that, and I have received tons of comments on my blog about it and emails and email notes about, you know, letting go of holding on. And, you know, we just tend to do that so much. We just hold on, and we just hold on to pain, and we hold on to situations we don't like. We're not pleased with where we are, but we just continue to do the same thing, the same thing, the same thing, and we do have choices. We have choices. We always have choices as to, you know, what we can do and how we can do it. So, you know, I just hope and pray that article has helped a lot of people. I know it has helped people because I've gotten a lot of comments from it. So we're going to make that the theme for the next couple of months. We're going to talk about letting go of holding on, and whether that relates to a job that you're in, whether that relates to toxic behavior that you have, whether that relates to a toxic relationship that you're in, whatever it is that you're holding on to, that you need to let go of. We're gonna focus on that, and we're gonna have a variety of different guests, Tony, because there are so many areas of our lives that relates to when you talk about letting go of holding on, because we hold on to stuff, people, things, jobs. We just hold on to, you know, bad habits, dysfunction, bad thought processes, addictions, just lots of dysfunctional things that we hold on to, and we know that it's bad for us, but we just keep holding on. So we're going to make that our theme over the next upcoming months. So I'm really looking forward to that, Tony.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, and you mentioned it in the article that was posted on our TLC website, TLCNaptown.com, which is the website for the radio station that I work for here in Indianapolis. And folks did make comments about it. And, I mean, the title is a great title, but the substance of the article is even better because people do have a tendency to hold on to those things and letting go of what you're holding on it was a great way of putting it because sometimes you just don't know. You aren't aware, you aren't observant enough. People may mention it to you, but it's that observation. It's that looking within yourself, looking at yourself, being honest with yourself, taking the time to do the things you need to do and being disciplined enough and courageous enough. Because it does take courage. It takes courage to let go of those things that you've depended on, whether they were good or bad. Folks have to be courageous to do that. And you can feel good about that. I mean, that's one of the things I loved about the article is because it identifies the fact that, you know, you have to be strong to do it. You have to be knowledgeable within yourself and for yourself and really want it. And that's an important part of it. So I really look forward to this upcoming month because it will give folks an opportunity to really work toward letting go, letting go of those things that they're holding on to.
That's right. That's exactly right. And it is one of those things that, you know, we all deal with, every single person. I know we've said many times on the show that, you know, you and I are motivational speakers and, you know, we do what we do, but, you know, we also struggle with those same types of situations. So it's always great to hear others' perspective and professionals, and that's why I'm hoping and praying that Dr. Gurr makes it back, Dr. Howard makes it back, to join us this evening for this discussion because he, you know, he does deal with this topic a lot, and I absolutely think he is back, and I am going to check here. Dr. Howard, is that
Yep,
you?
It's me.
Was that you?
Yeah, that was me. Unfortunately, I'm not technologically advanced to figure out how to unblock my blocked line.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, you figured it out.
Well, I had to get another line.
I'm proud of you. I'm very proud of you.
Sorry for that delay.
Oh, no problem, no problem. Tony and I, if you know, I don't know how much you heard of that, but Tony and I was just kind of giving our listeners a little sneak preview of the upcoming theme because we are doing our last show and we're closing the show out with a really good person because you have a lot of wonderful accolades and accomplishments to your credit. So I'm really excited that we're closing out July with a great guest.
Thank you.
And our upcoming theme for August and September is going to be to let go of holding on. Because I wrote an article for my blog about we hold on to things that are painful. And I know it's something that you definitely can speak to this evening from a psychological perspective,
right,
that we hold on to people and things and jobs and stuff and dysfunctional behaviors and addictions and whatever the thing is, we hold on to it, and we know it's bad for us. We know that's not going to advance our life. We know it's not going to help us accomplish our goal, but we hold on to it.
Well, if you look at all behavior from the one perspective that we as psychologists do, is that all behavior has a purpose and that we don't develop a behavior for, you know, just, you know, no real reason. The problem is that when we develop a behavior, it worked perfectly. But as time goes on and life changes, that behavior no longer is as functional. And yet we're afraid to let it go because when we developed it, we needed it. And what happens is people are afraid because they can't think beyond the immediacy because they believe that whatever they developed that behavior before, it's still an evident issue in their lives. So they hold on to a behavior that makes really no sense now, but it did function perfectly when it was developed.
And you know, Howard, in the case of, let's say, addictions, for instance, because I know that's one of the hardest things that people struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, like, you have an addiction to alcohol or whatever. And even though, you know, and it may be something in your life that you're just really trying to mask the pain.
Correct.
So your substance of choice is alcohol. And even though while you're drinking your alcohol, while you're doing whatever it is that you choose to do, you feel great. But then once you're done doing it, you feel miserable because you know that, oh, now, you know, you feel bad. I really should stop doing that. And it's, you know, why can't people realize that engaging in the behavior is only a temporary high or a temporary feel-good thing, but after it's over, they're going to feel a gazillion times worse?
Well, Kathy, that's a very complex question with a very complicated answer. I guess I'd have to go back to my experience so you know where I'm coming from. I would say the majority of the people who I work with a substance history, if you look back, you're right. The substance was used as a means of handling problems that were going on. And underneath, probably the majority of the people who I've dealt with who had substance issues were one of three long-term possibilities. One is tremendous social anxiety. Number two is kind of an underlying depression. And number three is many people who had long-term academic failures and difficulties that made, let's say, going to school and dealing with that on a daily basis and dealing with that frustration and sense of failure become problematic. And so they developed, again, a behavior to cover and mask these problems. Subsequently, that behavior, you know, a substance abuse, becomes a second problem. But what happens is, it, you know, in the beginning, they do get a high or a euphoria out of it. What happens, though, is that the body, the receptor sites in the brain for these substances become kind of killed off or you know, paralyzed to a certain extent. And these people are not getting the same high or euphoria that they did originally, which they're still seeking. So they're driven to get this euphoria. They keep trying over and over and over again to get that sense of euphoric, you know, quality that they had in the beginning, and they could never get it again. So
now,
they're destined to fail, and then you have, you know, the guilt and the self-remuneration and recrimination and you know, the depression that comes in after the fact.
Now let me ask you this, because I tell you, this is rare for me. I have, I guess maybe because I have been featured in a national publication over the last few weeks, and, you know, I've been getting hundreds of emails, but I have received three emails this week from three mm-hmm. different people about a problem that they're having, and I have no experience with this at all, and it's a pornography thing.
Mm-hmm.
None. I have no experience with that. I have no idea. I mean, I've had substance abuse in my family. I don't know. I mean, and the three emails that I received from these three different individuals, they're all three different kind of situations. I mean, I don't want to really talk about it because, you know, then they may
right.
say, oh, she's talking about my situation on there. But, you know, there are three different type of situations, and I don't really – I've never had any experience. I don't know – I mean, is that the same as substance? I don't know. Substance abuse?
I think it probably physiologically is that there's
so they get the
some
same
kind
high?
Of there's some kind of release of some kind of neurotransmitter. You know, the fact is that there are at this point 160 neurotransmitters in our brains that we know of today.
Mm.
In fact, pharmacological agents that we use for treatment probably only manipulate 5 or 6.
Mm.
So the bulk of them, we really don't know how to manipulate at all. And I think that probably the pornography is a release of some neural transmitter that is also somewhat euphoric in its state. You know, what most people don't think about is...
But they said the same thing that I just said, that when, you know, when after they're done, that they feel bad.
Yeah, they feel guilty, and they feel they're
right.
down on themselves, and they feel degraded. Yes, but they're still driven to repeat it because there's this magical belief in their head that maybe this time if I do it, I won't feel so bad, and I'll get that feeling I'm looking for. So they're driven to repeat this behavior, and still they can't understand why they fail.
Well, whether it's that or a substance or whatever the problem is, whatever the dysfunction is, whatever the, you know, keep doing the same thing over and over and over, expecting a different result behavior
right.
is, what's the first step to, you know, trying to, I mean, because I'm actually going back getting my master's in psychology, and I'm really excited.
Well, welcome to the club.
Yeah, I'm loving it. I'm learning a lot, too. But in the meantime, what is the answer, Howard? Because
I don't know
what to tell these individuals, and I certainly am not going to, you know, send them away and say, I don't know.
Well, you know, Kathy, it's a combination of a couple of variables. You know, we as human beings we're not a function of just one factor that impinges upon us. So it's a variety of issues. So, for example, a good percentage of who we are as individuals, in terms of our personality or predispositions, came with us from birth. So genetics plays a major factor here. You know, and that's why even when you look at substance issues, there's a good chance that if one member of a family has a substance issue, that subsequent members will also have substance issues if they're not careful. Same thing, for example, by the way, if I know, let's say, a patient of mine does very well with a particular antidepressant, I'm pretty sure that if someone else in the family, you know, a daughter or a son, needs an antidepressant, they'll do very well with that one as well. So biochemistry or physiologically speaking, we come with a certain package. After that is a whole variety of life experiences and situations which then continue to mold us. And, you know, just to go back a little, I was a psychoanalytically trained clinician. And over the years, I studied cognitive behavioral therapy in my practice and in my graduate studies, convinced that they would never sway me from a psychoanalytic approach.
Mm-hmm.
But lo and behold, the more I worked with it and the more I realized, cognitive behavioral therapy actually made much more sense. Because we are thinking beings, and there are things that we can control and things that we can't, and thinking is one of them that we can control. So there are little things that we do or can do that can make a significant difference in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking controls everything as quickly as possible. So let me give you my classic example.
Okay.
Tony, you're there, right?
Tony?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, so both of you, I need you to do this. I need you to use your imagination and imagine that you're entering an elevator. Let's say an elevator like the Empire State Building, a very, very long ride on an elevator. Imagine that you're the last one to get on the elevator. The elevator is packed, and the door closes right on your face. And you're kind of in there like a sardine. And you're in this elevator for a long period of time, and the entire time you're on this elevator, you're getting hit in the back of the leg with what appears to be a stick over and over and over again. And it's very annoying and very unsettling, but because you're in this elevator and it's packed and you don't want to make a big fuss, you're waiting for the doors to open up on the observation deck. Because when the doors open up, you're going to take your step out, you're going to spin around, and you're going to stare this person down, or you're going to make some kind of comment, whatever. Anyway, the doors open up on the highest floor, you take your step out, you spin around, and it's a little blind woman with a cane. Okay. So the question is this: what is your emotional reaction now that you know it's a woman with a cane who probably couldn't help it, as opposed to when you didn't know who it was? Is there a difference?
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. So now, the reason there's a difference is because you now have more information, and that additional information tells you, well, she couldn't help it, I'm going to let her off the hook. Now, the reality is that the time you get that information to the time your emotion changes, it's a 40th of a second. That's how powerful our thoughts are.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah, and I think I've heard we measure our thoughts in milliseconds or nanoseconds or is it
milliseconds? Yes.
Milliseconds. Yeah. Yeah.
So
pretty fast.
It is how we think that causes us to react, not what people are doing to us.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
You know,
No, I was just going to say, and that makes a lot of sense because that's the difference in decision-making in many instances, because if a person's thought, like using your example, if a person had the mindset and they thought differently, instead of that relief and changing their mindset of how they felt, they just are the kind of person because of this is how they think. I don't care what it is or who it was, you shouldn't have been hitting me with that cane. And even though you're a blind woman with a cane, I'm still going to say something to you. And there are individuals who have that mindset, so that's very true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but I mean, but there are people that do those kinds of things.
Well, you know, it's interesting because my early training was in a place called Fishkill Correctional Facility, which is a prison for the criminally insane.
Mm-hmm.
And I was 22 at the time, and I was now locked in a prison with these inmates. Most of my clients were multiple murderers. And I was this little kid. I mean, I was a young kid. And I learned at that point very quickly that not everyone looks at the world the way I do.
Yeah.
And
right. You're
right, Tony, because there are people who I would have dealt with who would have said, I'd knock her over, you know?
Right.
I mean, that's not funny. I'm sorry. That I cannot believe. Well, you're right. You're right, Howard and Tony, both. That just because I think the way I think, you're right. There are so many people who have a whole different outlook about life, themselves, situations. That is so true. But for the most part, Tony, for individuals like, you know, you and I and, you know, most people that do have some sense of emotional control,
mm-hmm.
You're right. That is a split second that you would go from being extremely annoyed to, you know, sympathetic.
Exactly.
And with that being the case, Howard, are you saying that is that what we should use to try to work on the issues that we have holding on to toxic things?
Well, I think that the message really is that it is not really what people do to us or what happens to us that is important or molds us. It is how we view those situations. You can change your view. You can change your perception. And by changing little things, you could actually change a situation completely. So, you know, you can go back to Shakespeare. And there are at least three quotes. I'll give you my three famous quotes. Hamlet said, "There exists nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." All right? And then Epictetus said, "Men are not disturbed by things, but by the view which they take of them." Now, that was a long, long time ago. And, of course, my favorite is Alfred E. Newman, which is, you know, "What Me Worry." So the reality is that our internal dialogue and logic, which is, you know, kind of molded by our experiences and also by our chemical or physiological makeup, because, you know, there are people out there who just, you know, are dark in terms of their perception of the world or the, you know, the glass is half empty, half full kind of person, or you know, the people who find things funny all the time, who could find humor into things all the time, or, you know, individuals who are shy versus outgoing. These are qualities that we're kind of born with to a certain extent. But we can be pushed into different directions given the experiences we have. So what I try to do with my clients is to teach them where their thinking came from and also kind of recognize how they can change their thinking. And it's as simple as, you know, one example is, for example, you know, you go to the dentist and you have a filling. So before the filling, they give you a Novocaine shot, all right?
Mm-hmm.
What does the dentist say before they give you the shot?
This is going to hurt?
Never. They would never say it's going to hurt. They would say it's going to be like, oh, there's a little pinch, a little discomfort.
That's right.
And then, you know, in my dentist's office, what he'll do is if he's going to give me the injection on one side, he'll have a dental assistant on the other side kind of like touching my shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, oh, okay, you know, you're just trying to distract me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I focus on that, then I'm not focusing on you giving me a shot. And if you're talking to me all the time, because you ever notice dentists talk to you all the time even though you can't talk back?
I know. Yes.
Well, they do that to distract you.
I had that exact thing happen to me today because I actually went to have an annual exam, and they drew blood because, you know, they draw blood to check your cholesterol. And you know, the blood nurse, whatever they call her, she said those exact words. I was just going to feel a little pinch. And then she started talking about my work and everything, and I'm like, I was thinking to myself, could you just please draw this blood and hurry up?
Yeah, but they're doing that just because they're distracting you. And the fact is that your internal vocabulary is very important. So, for example, if you would say, I'll give you my example. I did something very stupid one day. I was working with a drill, and they always say when you work with a drill, let the drill do the work. Don't push down on the drill. Well, of course, I was in a hurry, and I pushed down on the drill. The drill slid, and the drill bit went through my hand.
Mm.
And I was there looking at this, and I pulled the drill out of my hand, and I went, wow, that was interesting. And my wife was looking at me like I was, you know, nuts. Because I was, you know, kind of bleeding all over the place. But I said, but you know how that was interesting? Because it happened so fast that I didn't even feel the drill go through me. I mean, I felt the chuck, the heavy part of the drill, hit my hand. But I didn't feel the drill go through me. And I'm thinking, if someone would hold my hand out and say, okay, I'm going to drill you now, I would freak out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But because it happened so fast and I wasn't paying attention, it went right through me and I didn't feel it.
That's right.
So as a psychologist, I'm saying, wow, that was pretty interesting.
Exactly.
So,
but you know, I deal with a lot of clients who, for me, dealing with a client who actually knows that they have a problem or dysfunction or, you know, whatever the case may be, knowing, but it's the ones that don't know. I mean, you have to first come to the realization that this is an issue. It's the ones that don't really see it as an issue. They're just, you know, they're just kind of in denial.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's because it serves a purpose. You know, the basic rule of thumb is nobody changes behavior unless there are consequences. So if I hold on to an irrational behavior, it may be saving me from what may be something worse. Even though it makes no sense, it's protecting me. So you're trying to pull an irrational or non-functional behavior away from somebody because it makes no sense, and they're pulling it back because they're protecting themselves. So sometimes what you have to do with people like that is literally step them tangentially, little by little, by replacing the behavior that they have with something that's only slightly better. Then you move them one. Hold on, let me just take care of this. And then you move them again and again until you replace the behavior into something better. Because it's very hard to change somebody from a non-functional behavior to a functional behavior when they're fighting you.
Mm-hmm.
So you just kind of move them without them even knowing you're moving them.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of what we call just, you know, behavior replacement.
Right.
And then the other important piece is very important, is what we call cognitive restructuring. And that is changing somebody's perception and cognition of a situation. You know, going back to the fact that it is how we view something that's important, that kind of changes or controls how we respond. So, for example, going back to the dentist situation, it's our internal dialogue that's important. So, for example, some people would say, I was in this situation and it was killing me. And I stop them right there. And I say, no, it wasn't killing you. let's change that around to it was unfortunate or that's not the way I wanted it. Let's reduce the emotional response, because when you say something is killing you, that's too powerful. So we reduce the emotional vocabulary so that it's not that bad. And then you have to do what we call educated risks, which is that you have to get people to take steps, thought out steps, careful steps, because what you want to build in is success. So the steps that they take, they have to be small but successful steps, because the only thing that breeds success is success.
That's right. That's true. And if people had to do something on their own, what are some of the things that they could, you know, start slightly doing on their own?
Like kind of homework?
Yeah, just, you know, homework or things that they could do. You know, they know there's some behaviors that they want to change or some, you know, addiction, dysfunction, whatever, that they want to change. What could they do? And these are not people in denial. These are people who do want to change.
Well, again, we take small little steps. You know, like, for example, let's say someone leads a very unhealthy life and, you know, they do a lot of things. Because in reality, when you look at people who are addicted to things, they're generally not addicted to one thing. So, you know, for example, someone might be using alcohol excessively, but I'll find they'll also be smoking cigarettes and they'll be drinking coffee. And they'll be eating poorly, and they won't be exercising, you know, and this kind of whole package comes in. So you start tackling one thing at a time, and I generally will pick the least threatening thing to work on first, because, again, I want to build that success in. So I would say, okay, you know what, you know, you could smoke cigarettes for a long time. I'm not going to tackle that one. Why don't we start working on your diet? And then we'll start working on exercising. And you just get them into a mind frame of being successful in situations where, oh, you know, I'm starting to feel better, I'm starting to lose weight, I'm starting to feel better about myself. Okay, now let's start tackling the bigger ones. So you start off giving them assignments that you know they'll be successful doing, and they'll get the best bang for their buck, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. That's true. How much of this actually is related to comfort zones? I mean, because I know we get stuck and caught in comfort zones, even though there's nothing comfortable about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of it is dysfunction, a lot of it is addiction, but how much of it is just a comfort zone because, you know, that's, and is there a difference in addictions and, you know, bad habit choices and a comfort zone? Are they all the same?
I don't look at it as a comfort zone. I look at it more as safety. You know, I look at it as, people do what they need to do to keep themselves safe. But safety and fear are the worst things in the world to be as motivators.
Yeah.
So the problem is, it's just, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are afraid, so afraid to make changes, that they will hold on to dysfunctional behaviors or disturbed behaviors because the fear of the unknown is worse than the known that they have.
Wow.
So you have to build in a mindset that they will be able to take these challenges. And, you know, as a therapist, it requires you to build up a tremendous amount of trust from the patient because, you know, I'm the kind of guy, as a clinician, I'm not passive, I'm not quiet, and if I know something, I'm going to tell you what it is right now. And I'm going to push my clients to do what they need to do. In the long run, when they do what I tell them to do or what we work through, they do make a lot of progress.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much resistance and fear that you have to get over and past that, you know, that's really the major roadblock.
Yeah, that word fear, that's huge. That is absolutely huge because I really seem to think that fear may be at the root of just about every situation where there's a problem stepping out of the comfort zone or there's a dysfunctional behavior and habits and things that, you know you want to change, but you know you struggle with. I think fear is the root at a lot of. It's at the root of a lot of those types of.
Yeah, I agree, Kathy. It is, and I think that you know when you look at people who let's say are in, let's say terrible relationships, and you know they know it, everybody knows it, but they'll stay in that relationship, generally out of fear,
mm-hmm.
and you know, fear of the unknown or. How am I going to take care of myself? Or, you know, it's bad, but it could be worse.
Yes.
You know, and they'll make decisions that are unhealthy.
Right.
But, again, fear is such a motivator that they'll stay in a situation because safety is the utmost for them, even though it's not a safe, you know, we wouldn't call it a safe environment.
Right.
But for them.
Anything that's destroying your emotions is not a safe environment.
Right. But they would stay there because it's clearly better than what they perceive the alternative to be. And,
yeah.
and you know, you could look at it and say, well, how could the alternative be any worse? But, you know, you have to look at the point of view of we all look at the world through our own eyes. We all perceive the world through our own perspectives. And it's very difficult to get into somebody else's head and understand why they're there when it clearly does not make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
But to them, on some level, it does make sense. So it's just, you know, that, you know, just like going back to that prison for the criminally insane, that was a big wide, you know, eye-wide situation for me because I learned, oh, my God, these people do not look at the world the way I do. And then I realized that I have to be able to think like other people I'm dealing with to be able to help them. So when people come into my office, I literally switch my brain and my thinking every single time somebody comes in, and I look at the world through their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So
now go ahead.
It just requires a lot of, understanding about human dynamics and why people do what they do and being able to help them work through a situation that is so scary, they have to be able to trust that I'm going to be on their side no matter what. And it just requires a lot of effort, but, my experience has been pretty positive, and not with everybody. You know, you can't fix everybody, but the majority of my clients have done pretty well, and that's the kind of, you know, that's all you really need as a clinician to be able to, you know, I did something to help somebody else's life be better.
Mm-hmm. What do you do, Howard, when you do have patients that come to you and they say, you know, I want to change this or I want to change that or I want to feel better.
Mm-hmm.
I want to feel better and I want to do better. And then you give them some tasks or some things to do or some methods to try and they try it and it doesn't work. What's your next form of action?
Well, I always want to know where did it go wrong, what happened. Let's go through it step by step and figure out, you know where it, you know, it didn't go well. You know, I'll give you an example on that. I work with a lot of kids as well. I see children from 5. I say my private practice is filled with children from 5 to 80. And I'll see kids who are getting, bullied or getting into arguments. And, you know, every parent probably says to their kids, you know, just ignore them. And it never seems to work. And so what I do is I'll say, let's go through this. I know your mother's going to say ignore them. So let's try that first and see how that works. So I would then role play with the child and say, okay, I'm going to be the bully. Let's do what I'm going to do what the bully does, and I want you to ignore me. And what you find is when children like try to ignore, what they do is they fold their arms, and they look up, and they look away from the individual, and they say, "See, I'm ignoring." And I'm saying, "No, that's not ignoring. That's saying to me, I'm purposely not looking at you because I'm supposed to do that. But I know, as a bully, I know I still got you." So. You know, that would be an example of a situation where, you know, if you just said to somebody, okay, just ignore them and let's see what happens. Well, it wouldn't work because little kids don't know how to really ignore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they kind of pretend to ignore, but mm-hmm. another kid will read right through that.
Right.
So, you know, that's an example with kids. With adults, you know, there are many situations where I would tell an adult, you know, like, for example, one of the hardest things in the world to do is to be assertive. You know, as individuals, we're taught how to be, we could be aggressive or we could be unassertive. So an aggressive individual or an aggressive situation is one in which, you know, I have a conversation with someone, and if I'm aggressive, I'm either going to hurt their feelings or I'm going to hurt, you know, them physically. And if I'm unassertive, then I kind of like passively sit there and, you know, take it and don't say anything, and I get beaten up, basically. But to be assertive is to have a communication with someone in which nobody gets hurt and your feelings get expressed and you might actually get what you want. And so I have to teach people how to actually communicate assertively because most people don't know how to do that. And it becomes a whole series of sessions on how to communicate your feelings assertively and get your point across in such a way that you can get what you want. So, again, it's another situation where I would be role-playing a dynamic between two people if it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So I'm literally teaching people how to actually communicate under those circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it's a matter of being very directive with individuals and also being real. So, you know, I always tell people, you know, here's what I do. Here's what happened to me. Here's my experience. Here's what I do with my kids. Here's what I do with my wife. Here's what I did at work. So they get a sense that, you know, I'm a human being as well.
Right.
Sorry.
Go ahead. Yeah.
And again, it's an issue of letting them know that what I'm telling you is what I would do.
Right.
So it's not like, you know, I'm giving you some skills that I know don't work or some tools that are, you know, theoretically bound in reality, but nobody knows how well they'll fit you. These are things that I know I would use in my life, and I modify for them. And I say, okay, now I want you to try this. Go out, come back, and tell me how it went.
Right. And I want to before time runs out, because we've got about 10 minutes left of the show, but I want to just touch a little bit on emotions as it relates to depression and anxiety, because I know a lot of people, especially, you know, with the recession and everything, a lot of people are dealing with those
mm-hmm.
you know, those mental and psychological situations and challenges. And I know some of the things we're talking about, you know, the substance and the dysfunction and the addictions can stem from that, you know, depression and anxiety and emotional
exactly.
distress. So how can, and I know our neurotransmitters, you know, have all of those dopamine and serotonin, sometimes those chemicals get imbalanced and,
mm-hmm.
and that can cause some of that. But what are some of the things that, you know, we can do to enhance our neurotransmitter, serotonin, dopamine, and those types of chemicals in our brain that make us feel good and make us feel better, make us feel optimistic and feel positive and believe that we can do it? What are some of the things that we can do naturally to enhance that? Because I know last week we talked about, you know, just something simple like just a smile and, you know, doing fun things, even though you may not feel like doing something fun, but just do something
yes.
fun and
exactly.
enjoyable and have balance in your life. You can't always be doom and gloom.
No, right. And you know, you're right. And the answer is very simple. It actually just comes down to one word, and that is the word control.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you look at the way we're kind of wired, we like to be in control of our destiny. We like to be in control of our lives. And you know, getting back to your example, that, you know, the reality is that when people are losing their jobs and they have, you know, great concern about whether their family could, you know, survive the next week or the next month, and it's not in their control to provide that security and safety, you know, they're going to get depressed. And the uncertainty of one's life in a financial situation or economic problem would create anxiety. So these are things that are born out of feeling a lack of control in our lives. And so,
but we
have
control, and people don't realize that our conscious mind,
mm-hmm.
our subconscious just handles all of the stuff up that's stored in there. It's been stored in there forever. Our conscious mind actually makes choices and decisions.
Mm-hmm.
We can consciously do that, but people don't. They don't.
Well,
they don't
because they think they have no control. And again, that's that perception that if you believe you're powerless and you have no control over your destiny, then in fact you will be powerless and have no control over your destiny. But if you believe strongly enough that you can impact your life in a positive way and you orient yourself by taking steps to do that, and I think when I say taking steps, I mean really consciously thinking, all right, what can I do to enhance my life? What can I do now today to improve the quality of my existence? And, you know, you might make a list of things that you can do that day. And even if you come up with three things, if you cross those things off because you've done them, then you've accomplished something that day. And if you've improved the quality of your existence by changing something in a positive way, then you've improved yourself. You know, for example, I have patients who, lost their job, let's say, a couple of years ago, and they've been working part-time or they've been working in a non-related field for a long time, and they say to me, well, I can't find a job. I can't find another job. And I would say to them something like, well, that's because you're doing it the wrong way. You're doing it the way everyone does it. You're looking in the papers. And you're responding to ads for jobs. Well, that's what everyone does. So your resume is going in just like thousands of other people's resumes, and you're not standing out. I said, you know, I wouldn't do it that way. What I would do is I would go around a completely different angle. So, for example, let's say I was talking to a salesman. I would say, you know what? What would happen if you walked into I would say, there's got to be a product that you love. You know, something in your daily life that you love, and you could probably sell it cold only because you really love this product. I say, what would happen if you went to that company and said, listen, I love your product. I'll do anything in your company, and or let's say I'll even rep your product for nothing. Just give me commission on anything I sell.
Mm-hmm.
And they have nothing to lose. You have everything to gain. And even if they don't want you, they're going to have to get your energy and your interest and enthusiasm during that conversation if you can get your foot in the door. And maybe the person you're interviewing with says, you know what, I can't use you, but, you know, I was playing golf with my friend Joe, and he was looking for someone just like you. Let me give him a call. And I would say, you know, you would never get that opportunity if you didn't walk in that door. If you were just a piece of paper, a resume, you could be rejected easily, but it's tough to reject a real person. So it's just another example of making a change in the way we view things and the way we do things, possibly getting ourselves into a different position only because we did it a little bit differently.
And I guess, you know, like we said earlier, that, you know, if you get miserable enough and it just really starts to tear your life down and you just get to the point of, you know, just total at the bottom of the barrel, maybe that's the motivator. I mean, I would hate for that to be the motivator, but sometimes that is the motivator where you just hit rock bottom and you don't have anywhere to go but up.
For people with substance issues, generally that is the motivator, because
mm-hmm.
Generally what we find is that people with substance issues are the last person in the world to acknowledge that they have a substance problem. Mm-hmm. Everyone else would know, but they wouldn't. Mm-hmm. So many people have to hit rock bottom until they have no other option, and now they have to rebuild. But you're right, Kathy. Maybe people can jump in before they have to hit rock bottom. Maybe they could make the changes so that they don't have to have such a dire circumstance that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
But
why I want to have the theme next month, you know, letting go of holding on, because there are so many codependent folks out there. I mean, they know that their significant other or their wife or husband or loved one or brother or sister or somebody has some type of situation where they're stuck in a spot, And, you know, you're just enabling them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you give them money or help them out or do whatever they ask you to do, you're enabling them. And that's why I want to focus on that next month, the next couple of months, because those enablers need to also let go.
Right.
You know, we've got to let go and allow that person to, you know, go through whatever misery and pain they're going to go through, whatever terrible mindset. If they feel bad about the choices they're making and they've hit rock bottom, the enablers are going to have to try to be strong and step back and step aside and just let the person hit rock bottom.
Again, we go back to that word, fear. You know, fear motivates people. They're afraid if they do let go, then that person's really going to fall apart and they're really going to get hurt, and then we're going to feel guilty and terrible about ourselves. And so rather than avoid or deal with all of those things, I'll try to avoid it by just keeping them going, hoping magically that maybe they'll turn things around.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that, you know, it's the fear and that magical belief system that, you know, all I have to do is give them, you know, the next, if I just give them $100,
yeah,
then that'll be enough. They'll get themselves on their feet.
You can love and support them and still not be an enabler.
Exactly.
You can love them and support them and help them. If they need motivating and uplifting, yes, you can do it. You can do it. I'll be your biggest cheerleader. But I am not going to put money in your hand or help enable you to go toward that problem that you have.
Exactly.
And that's what we have to do as supporters.
It's hard to convince people, Kathy. That's a tough one.
And that's why I like taking on tough topics on this show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're right. It is a tough one. It's a very tough one. But sometimes I have seen, Howard and Tony, you know this too, sometimes I have seen that if you just take an interest in somebody and you just show that you believe in them and you know they can do it and you just support them and tell them that, sometimes that's all it takes. Because sometimes people feel like the world is against them. I can't do it. Nobody has ever encouraged me. Nobody really cares. Nobody. And sometimes if you just show you care, I believe in you, I know you can do it, sometimes that works. Sometimes it doesn't. But that's why I do this show.
You're right, because if there are people out there who've never gotten that in their whole lives. They didn't get that from their core family. They didn't get that from other people. They never got anyone who said, you could do it.
Right. That's right. And that's why I love having these shows. I love these topics. I love bringing on experts like you and getting so many different perspectives, because I want people to know that, you know, that I know there's a lot of negative media out there. There's tons of negative media, but there's also a ton of positive media who's reinforcing the fact that you are brilliant, you are worthy, you can do it, and you can accomplish whatever you want in your life if you just want it bad enough.
Exactly. I agree.
You just want it bad enough. And with that, I am going to say thank you, because we're coming up on our last 60 seconds. Dr. Howard Gurr, thank you so much. And if you Google Dr. Gurr's name, you will find him, his radio show, and he has tons of podcasts. He's on Podomatic, and you can listen to some of his archive shows. They are fantastic, because I listen to quite a few of them myself.
Well, thank you, Kathy. Thank you for having me on your show. Tony?
Thank you.
Okay.
And we want to thank everyone for joining us. We're closing out the month of July. This year is flying by. And I hope you listen to our events, our upcoming events. And if you didn't hear it in the first part of the show and you missed it, go to emotionalbailout.com and click on the events tab, and all of the details are there. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this week. We'll see you next week on Living by Design. I'm Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
Good night, everyone.
Hey there. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, I'm still on.
Why are you still here?
I just hadn't hung up yet.
Okay, well, hang up so I can call you back.